pictures when I was a lad. Saturday pictures when I was a lad. Those were the greatest days of all.
It was 9 a.m. on a Monday and Hackney was jumping. Someone pulled the curtains and then someone unpulled them because we had nothing to hide. There was me and Aftab, my girlfriend Molly, Laurie McLeod, a load of guys from Cambridge and a load of guys from Hackney, born and raised, because class is no barrier and never will be. Not when there's minimal, ambient, post-dubstep playing loud. And then we're all out of beers, so Molly and I scuttle out down the stoop with no coats on, grinning at the morning sun, swinging our arms and feeling bad for the workers huddling at bus stops. We buy beers and eggs and bread, and Molly buys flowers for everybody. And then Dean Moriarty pulls up. Dean turns to me and says,
"We got your CV, Mr. Williams. Mr. Williams.
Yep.
Got your CV with you."
I wasn't really drinking and dancing to post-dubstep with a bunch of other cool cats. I wasn't with Molly or Dean Moriarty, because Molly was in Australia and Dean Moriarty is a semi-fictional character from Jack Kerouac's picaresque novel On the Road, which was the book I was reading. I wasn't in Hackney, I was in Leeds, but it was 9 a.m. on a Monday morning.
"My name's Kevin, I'll be your advisor today. So if you'd like to start telling me what your employment status is at the moment."
"Well, I've just left university."
"Which one?"
Cambridge.
"You're joking. Sorry, I mean, what are you doing here then? I knew economy were bad, but not that bad."
"Oh, it's not for long, hopefully. Just while I work out what I'm going to do next."
"So, what are your skills?"
"Well, writing."
"Writing's not really a skill, mate. It's just something most people can do."
"No, I mean, well, like, I maybe want to be, like, a writer-performer."
"Right, okay. Well, let's see what jobs there are for you. It looks like writer and performer are not actual jobs, so what do you want me to put?"
"Well, I'm happy to find my own work, really. Like, I might go to the Edinburgh Fringe next year."
"No, I respect that, mate. It's just that you need to be actively seeking work if you want to claim job seeker's allowance."
Okay, well, maybe actor?"
Yep, we've got actor. See what's available for actor. Okay, there's one job available."
"Oh, what is it?"
"Santa's elf." "I reckon with your CV, you might have a shot at that."
"Oh, thanks."
There's one issue."
"What's that?"
"Don't start till December."
"You're joking."
"'Cause of Christmas, probably."
"You reckon?"
"It's only September, so probably a bit early to apply for that."
"Reports state that the United Kingdom has the worst quality of life in Europe due to long hours, bad weather, low life expectancy and the high price of many consumer goods as a result of the recession."
"How was the job centre this morning?"
"All right. They'll give me dole for a few months and then I'll have to take whatever work they can find me."
"So they couldn't offer you anything you wanted?"
"All they had was Christmas elf."
"Oh. Well, I'm sure you'd be qualified for that."
"It doesn't start till December."
"'Cause of Christmas."
"Could you just be a normal elf? Do they have elves all year round?"
"Don't think so."
"Well, I know what I think you should do."
"I don't want to be an English teacher."
"Why not?"
"Because."
"Because... because I could envision very clearly what sort of an English teacher I would be. Tired and drunk and probably unmarried, completely embittered by the age of 30, too impatient to properly engage with anybody but the cleverest students, whom I'd unfortunately also resent because of the success I suspected they'd have in life."
"I don't know. I want to do comedy."
"Oh, but how do you... what do you... well, I don't even know what to ask."
"To be fair, I didn't have much more of a clue myself.
I'm going to save some money and then move down to London."
"But it costs about £400 a month to rent in London."
"Oh, for a time when £400 a month was a valid hyperbolic description of a standard London rental price."
"That's why I said I'm going to save some money."
"Don't you think it'd be safer to apply for a PGCE? You could always do comedy on the side. I just think in this economy, you're better off pursuing something more realistic."
"I'll think about it."
"I don't want to push you."
"Thanks."
"But you've only got a few weeks to apply."
"Look, I don't need you to plan my future for me. I'm an adult now."
"I know, love."
"What time's dinner?"
"In about an hour. Fish fingers."
"Yes." "Great. Oh, and did you tape Countdown for me?"
"Yes. And Deal or No Deal."
"I don't expect you to do that. You've gone the extra mile there and I appreciate that."
"Anything else you need?"
Please could you lend me £500?
£500? What for?"
"Flights to Australia to see Molly."
"Do you think you might marry her?"
"What's that got to do with it?"
"Well, if you might get married and have kids one day, then it could be a worthwhile investment for us."
"What, so the only reason to lend me the money is if we're going to get married?"
"You don't feed a dying dog."
"What if it's dying of malnutrition?"
"No."
It's a no.
Not in this economy.
Because of the economy.
But I'll pay you back.
That's what all those people with subprime mortgages said.
Though his grasp of the root causes of the financial crisis was shaky, and let's be honest, whose wasn't, he had made his point. No loan. So there I was, another victim of the crash. Working people who saw their life savings disappear, the disabled who saw their benefits and services cut, the disadvantaged who became homeless during the ensuing housing crisis, but hardest done by of all, there was me, who couldn't afford to fly to Australia and would have to wait an extra few months to see the girl I loved. Molly would call me as often as she could, which amounted to about once or twice a week. This, I remember fretting, was not very much, and the sense of detachment was compounded at this time by the fact that Molly was in Australia and thus 10 hours ahead, and so our phone calls were often conducted while she ate her breakfast and I was drunk.
Hey, baby, how are you?
Hey, Molly, I miss you.
Oh, are you all right?
Yeah. How about you?
I'm good. About to head to the beach. Laura got talking to these Australian guys yesterday and they tried to teach us how to surf, but I was rubbish and I kept falling off and they all laughed at me.
It's taken me the best part of 10 years to realise that there is nothing more boring than male romantic jealousy, so I will dwell no further on this detail, but at the time it probably made me feel quite sad.
All right.
Are you sure you're okay?
No, yeah, I'm fine.
Cool. What are you up to this evening?
When I think back now, I have almost no recollection of how I spent my evenings during this period. Generally, I suppose, alone in my small childhood bedroom, lying on my single bed, scrolling stupidly through Facebook, putting away 7 or 8 bottles of lager across the evening, and venturing outside into the suburban nights exactly once an hour to smoke.
I don't know, probably just going to town with a few friends, maybe watch a film.
Great.
So I've got some bad news. I can't afford to come to Australia.
Ah, that sucks. Mm. But it was a lot to ask. Listen, though, I've actually got some good news.
I had genuinely not received a piece of good news since Molly left.
What is it?
Well, you know we want to live together in London when I get back.
Yeah?
Well, my parents have got this flat.
That's amazing.
It's my granddad's old flat. It's been sitting empty since he died last year.
Right. Would it be weird to live there?
Maybe a bit, but they're planning to sell it and it's going to take them ages to sort it out, so it's just sitting empty.
Okay.
It'll just be for a few months while we find somewhere longer term. Or do you think it's the right thing to move in together? I mean, maybe we should wait.
No. I think it sounds great.
Oh, good. Me too. I was just checking. I get back on December the 23rd, so you could come down just after Christmas.
Cool.
I can't wait to see you. I mean, I know I'm looking forward to going to Fiji and Chile and Peru and Mexico and all around America. Don't get me wrong. I just wish you could be here.
Me too.
So, what are you going to do for the next 3 months?
I don't know. My mum wants me to apply to do a PGCE at Cambridge.
Would you want to do that?
I wouldn't mind going back there, I guess. Could do more gigs. Go to Edinburgh with a sketch show, maybe. Oh, we got this idea for the show, right? A funny professor has invented a character machine, and every time he presses a big red button, a different character...
I'll just be a minute, guys.
Come on, we're getting in the U.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, that sounds really funny. I love the idea of a character medicine.
Character machine. What's a U?
Okay, baby, I've got... Fred's freaking war at me. Hmm. I'll call you when I get to Perth. I love you.
Love you.
So, Mr. Williams, why do you want to be a teacher?
I mean, to be honest, I don't really want to be a teacher. Like, I've basically just applied to appease my mum.
Right.
I've got nothing against teaching. I just don't think it's for me. Like, I'm a creative, and there's a degree of selfishness implied by that. But I just think if I end up teaching, I'll feel like I haven't followed my correct path somehow, you know?
Uh-huh.
I didn't use these exact words, but definitely this exact subtext. As autumn turned to winter... I didn't get on the course, by the way, in case that needed pointing out. As autumn turned to winter, that new school year feeling that haunts the air until about Halloween dissipated, leaving an empty world where nothing could ever happen. Molly's calls came, regular in their irregularity, these moments of faltering communion across the meridians, but the rest of the time I was left to scroll through her Facebook photos, which depicted her as the protagonist of a distinctly Kerouacian adventure, albeit one with significantly less benzedrine, bebop, and sexual aggression.
Once a fortnight, I'd take the bus into Leeds to sign on and dream I was some 50s beatnik about to set out on some odyssey across America and not some noughties div boy about to set out on some odyssey across Pornhub. My only sucker through it all was the anticipation of the life Molly and I would have in London.
Oh, she can wait for what I can give. She
I was to arrive in London a few days after Christmas, and I set out one midwinter morning to Leeds Station, where a few disbelieving commuters picked their way through shoppers and gang drinkers and the miscellaneous other creatures either lucky or unlucky enough to have no work on.
The train to London King's Cross will depart from Platform 7. For passengers intending to board this train, please do so now, as it is ready to leave.
Excuse me, mate.
Yeah, watch out, sorry.
Yes. Hello, Molly.
Hello.
How are you?
Oh, sleepy.
How was the flight?
Long.
Yeah, well, New York is a long way away.
How are you?
I'm good. I made the train, thank God, so I'll be with you very soon.
I'll come meet you at the station.
And just in case you were thinking that was one of those lazy story moments where two characters make a plan to meet without specifying a time, I had already texted her to say the train would get in at 3:17 p.m. Bozo.
I thought you said it got in at 3:17 p.m.
I got the time wrong. I'm sorry, baby. Are you mad?
No.
Molly had a fantastic temperament and never admitted to being annoyed whenever I messed up. This is a valuable trait in a girlfriend, and one I was sure she'd sustain unwaveringly for the entirety of the relationship. Physical business wrapped up, Molly led me to the tube, and we travelled to Leytonstone in East London and our new abode. Sunny Meadows Elderly Residential Community. This is an old people's home. What the hell are we doing here?
It's an elderly residential community. An old people's home is like a nursing home. This is just a building where a load of people who can't look after themselves live in flats.
Why didn't you tell me?
Because I knew this is how you'd react.
Because we can't live here. Someone will complain.
If anybody asks, and I'm sure they won't, but if they do, we don't live here. We're just here to visit my elderly uncle. It's just a white lie. Well, it's a grey lie. Oh, grey lie. Bad joke, sorry.
It's not the morality of it so much as the logistics. Like, if we don't live here, why would we be here so often?
They'll never see us. Once we get jobs, we'll be out really early and home really late.
I don't know about this.
All right, what do you suggest then? Where are we going to go? Back to Leeds? Live at your house?
No.
Right then. Welcome to Sunny Meadows.
Smells of cabbage.
You'll get used to it.
I'm already used to it. It's amazing. This really was, altogether, quite a charming setup, strangely reminiscent of my student accommodation. A reasonably modern, functional building containing maybe 50 presumably spatially identical units. In our flat, we had a large combined living/dining area furnished with some unproblematic watercolours, a bathroom complete with handrails, and a red emergency cord in case you were dying. We had a small kitchen and a bedroom with a big old bed with a remote control to make it go up and down, and which was so big and so soft and so bedecked with pillows and whose duvet and sheets were so heavy and so tightly tucked down, it was actually not comfortable but actually quite stressful to be in. Perhaps it was good preparation for the grave in a way.
It's exactly how it was before he died.
Well, I'm sure he'd be happy if he could see us here now.
To be honest, I think he'd be mad that people are living in his house.
Oh, really?
Yeah. He'd be like, who's that northern bastard shagging me granddaughter in my bed?
I imagined this every single time we had sex from then on.
I mean, he sounds like a dickhead.
Well, he had a hard life.
That night, Molly made us gnocchi in the little kitchen, and we watched bad TV in the living room, and we made love in the big bed.
Who's that northern bastard shagging me granddaughter in me bed?
The next day, we woke up late and ate bacon sandwiches while watching Gilmore Girls in bed. This established the beginning of a rather lovely new era in both of our lives, an era many weeks long, and throughout which this kind of pattern looped over and over. We'd wake up late, watch Gilmore Girls or Tudor Farm, before summoning the courage to hurry through the corridors of Sunny Meadows with bowed heads and thin-lipped smiles to deflect the skeleton-eyed suspicions of our neighbours, and traipse down to Tesco to buy milk and more bacon and more gnocchi using what we had left of my dole money or Molly's travelling fund. Our interactions with the wider world were minimal, notwithstanding my still pernicious Facebook habit, nay, addiction, which Molly would often seek to counsel me on.
with little success. One afternoon, though, as we returned from Tesco, we met somebody in the corridor.
Have you got the keys?
No. I gave them to you, didn't I?
Excuse me.
Hello there.
Who are you?
I'm Molly, and this is Liam.
Hello. What's your name?
I'm 87.
Ryan.
What are you doing here?
We are visiting Molly's granddad.
Uncle.
Uncle?
Uncle or granddad?
He's my uncle.
We call him granddad because we're so close to him, because he's such a nice uncle. That's why we visit him every day.
Hello there.
Yep, hello.
What's your uncle called?
He's called...
Callum.
Callum doesn't sound like an old man's name.
No, it doesn't. But he's not that old. He's 45.
Oh, you've got to be 65 to live here.
Like 4 to 5. He's 45 years into his retirement, so he's, what, 69, 70?
I've never seen him.
No, well, he's in bed most of the time, you see.
Why?
Because he's ill.
What's wrong with him?
He's got... polio.
Oh, polio. Well, shouldn't he be in hospital?
You'd think so, yeah, but it's a mild case. He just needs a lot of looking after and... Oh, found the keys now, so we better go in. Bye.
Bye.
I'm 87.
Why the hell did you say he's got polio?
I panicked.
She's going to report us to the building manager.
She won't. She doesn't have a clue what's going on.
Will you put the shopping away today?
Yeah, I will in a minute. I'm just going to have a little rest first.
What do you need a rest for? You haven't done anything all day.
I'm tired.
You're turning into an old man living here.
I don't think I am.
Oh, fine, I'll do it.
No, I said I'll do it in a minute.
No, don't worry, baby. You just rest.
I think I'll put a record on.
Oh, do what you like.
What to choose?
What are we going to do?
What, tonight?
Ever. Tomorrow, next week, next month. The future. I'm sorry, baby, it's just... What in God's name is this?
It's called The Songs That Won the War for Us. It's my favourite record right now.
You're so weird. Oh, sorry. I just feel like we need more purpose in our lives. I'm just not a dosser.
Well, neither am I.
No, I know you're not. That's why we need things to do. I'm going to apply for some grad schemes.
Wow. I mean, that's going to be very competitive.
Thanks for the support.
Sorry, I mean... That's great. I think that's a great idea.
And you should be... doing gigs, writing, looking for opportunities.
Yeah, yeah. It's just, you know, you need inspiration for that, and I'm not very inspired at the moment. But I will be soon, I'm sure.
Why? Why do you think you're going to be inspired soon?
I don't know. I guess I could just feel it, feel the inspiration coming to me, towards me. You know?
I think... You need to find inspiration if it doesn't come to you. Make something happen.
Yeah, you're right. I'm going to get up tomorrow. I'm going to book some gigs in.
Good. Do some gnocchi for dinner?
Yes, please.
After Molly used the word dossing, lying in bed all day and watching Gilmore Girls and drinking tea with the curtains closed didn't feel so dreamy. The shine had come off the relationship and I didn't know how to restore it. I tried to heed Molly's words about taking action, but my routine proved hard to break. Maybe once a week I'd spend the afternoon writing jokes, and then I'd take the tube an hour across town or get on a train and travel 2 or 3 hours out of London to some chlorine-reeking pub where a gig was held upstairs or in the basement or behind a curtain away from the drinkers, and I'd wait and watch new comedian after new comedian go up and struggle to raise a laugh. Until... I was finally allowed to take to the stage and struggle to raise a laugh before shambling back to the station and sitting and soul-searching all the way back to Sunny Meadows where Molly would be up late filling in application forms. But most days I carried on as before, I suppose in hindsight not making Molly very happy. Primarily, I guessed, because I kept forgetting to buy milk. She took a job as a nanny in West London, which she actually seemed to enjoy. More than sitting in with me all day.
Oh, hey, baby, how was your day?
Good. Sammy started calling me Mau Mau, which is nice.
Who's Sammy?
The kid. I'm nannying. I've told you, like, 75 times.
Oh, yes. Sorry. Mau Mau. That is funny.
What the hell are you wearing?
Oh, this is just a cardigan I found in the cupboard.
Wearing my dead granddad's clothes now.
Well, I didn't have any clean ones.
Well, do some washing, like I said. Oh, you haven't cleaned the kitchen either, have you?
Sorry, baby, I honestly forgot.
Oh, don't worry about it. I'm stressed enough as it is.
Why are you stressed?
Just everything. And, right, when I was going out this morning, the building manager was in the hall, and I tried to just smile and walk past her, but she stood right in front of me and asked all these questions about who we are, who my uncle is.
Shit.
She said she'd heard from one of the residents that he had polio.
So what did you say?
I said I didn't know anything about it. And she said Wynne must have been confused, which made me feel terrible, but they're onto us.
I'm sure it'll just blow over. Just try not to worry about it.
And I got my first job interview next week.
Oh, yeah.
Will you help me with my questions?
Yes, yeah, definitely will. In a bit, I'm just trying to get a bit of writing done.
Writing or looking at Facebook.
I'm just taking a little break. Are you crying?
Oh, thanks for noticing.
What?
I feel like I've been crying continuously for about 3 days.
I didn't realise.
Because you don't bloody look at me anymore. You just look at that bloody screen.
So you're crying because I look at Facebook too much?
No, it's not just one thing. It's I can't tell you what it is. The fact that I need to tell you is sort of the problem. Did you buy milk?
No, because it looked windy. Where are you going?
Out!
Molly didn't come back for about 2 days. The next day I bought milk and cleaned the flat and washed my clothes and stayed off Facebook. When she did come back, Molly didn't cry again, but she didn't really smile or laugh or anything either. She just glided about with a neutral expression and treated me with a sort of anti-romantic politeness. Then, one day, a letter came.
Molly, there's a letter. To the residents. Urgent.
Could you give it to me, please? Thank you.
She read it and, without reacting, handed it to me.
Dear residents, it has come to our attention that your uncle doesn't exist.
We're getting kicked out.
Yep.
Shit. Shit.
Uh-huh.
What are we going to do?
Well, my sister's flatmate just moved out, so she's got a spare room in Clapham.
Oh, wow. That's lucky timing.
Yeah.
So when can we go?
I think I'm just going to go on my own.
What are you saying?
For a while, I stayed at Aftab's. He said his flatmates were too work-focused to have someone stay on the couch, so I had to sleep on his bedroom floor. He was a good friend, but I sensed that he was tolerating my misery rather than actively seeking to ameliorate it.
Well, I'm gonna get some sleep, man.
Okay, mate.
And I've got some earplugs now, so feel free to cry as loud as you want tonight.
Aftab would go out early and come home late. I'd sleep most of the day and watch comfortable old sitcoms and scroll through Facebook the rest of the time. Soon I had to move out because, as Aftab delicately explained,
my housemates don't like you.
Also, there was an election approaching, and Aftab was going to vote Conservative, while I had caught Cleggmania, so would be voting Lib Dem, and differences like that can never be resolved. I moved in with a bunch of other artsy guys from Cambridge, and they were more my speed. There were five of us, an aspiring playwright, an aspiring director, and two aspiring comedians, all of us single. We called ourselves the Lonely Lads, living in a three-bed flat near Tottenham. We'd stay up late, exploring the wonderful world of Eastern European beers, talking about culture and politics and which girls from uni we regretted never having had chance to kiss. Sometimes I'd stay up particularly late with one or other of them and try to put into words the anguish I felt over Molly, a new kind of anguish, bluer than a drug come down, bleaker than a Plath poem, duller than concussion. Molly and I were right for each other. I was 70 to 80% sure of it, which is surely about as sure as you can ever be of these things. You might only meet someone so compatible 3-4 times in a lifetime. I'd thrown away something precious. And, as one of the comedians said to me one night,
"You've got to get her back, man. Just tell her how you feel."
So, I tried.
So, what do you want to talk about?
I just need to tell you that
I'll spare you the gory details. Some of it was clichéd, some quite eloquent, some of it scripted, most from the heart. When I'd finished, she stared at the table for a bit. Eventually she spoke.
"Liam, I can't..."
"Please, just like what? What do you need me to do?"
"Look, there's nothing. I'm really sorry. We both got some growing to do and we can't do it together. I'm not going to change my mind."
A couple of weeks later, Molly, in an act of Parthian kindness, got her friend, another Cambridge guy, to give me a job. I just do not know how you're supposed to get anywhere in this country if you haven't been to Cambridge. The job was doing the subtitles for a monolithic TV broadcaster, and let's just say it wasn't the BBC. I'd sit watching the news with a pair of headphones on and repeat back what I heard into a microphone with a robotically intoned voice, inserting the punctuation,
like...
The Conservatives and the Liberal Democrats have drawn up a document outlining the issues that they will agree upon in order to provide strong and stable government, full stop.
I worked 12-hour shifts, sometimes through the night, writing comedy on my breaks and gigging on my nights off. When I wasn't working or gigging, I was looking at Facebook less and reading books instead. I can highly recommend books. There are some very interesting ones out there. The news was bad, and I had to look at it all day. I wanted desperately to do something about it, but not desperately enough, I suppose, to actually bother working out what that would be. In my own little corner of the universe, things were getting better. I had some money and people to hang out with, and I was getting quite good at stand-up. People, it turned out, find frustration and failure and pain funny. More than they ever found inexperience and bad puns funny, anyway. In July, I quit my job and went to the Edinburgh Fringe with my housemates. Our show went down well and a nice girl kissed me. Things didn't really flourish romantically between us, but like many of the people I met during this time, she became one of my best friends. Back in London, the director and the playwright moved out of the flat, so I had my own bedroom overlooking the garden, in which there was a tree, and often a couple of Polish kids playing football. From my window, I watched the summer drift away and the coming of blotted autumn skies. I deleted my Facebook account. In November, Molly and I met for a tea on the Charing Cross Road. Things were different this time. I had no speech prepared. We caught up. Molly had gotten a job for a human rights charity, which didn't pay loads, but which she liked. We laughed a bit about Gilmore Girls and deplored the bad new government. And Molly was pleased that I seemed to care a bit more about politics suddenly. Then we hugged goodbye, and I watched her go down into the tube. My old lover, girlfriend, soulmate, best friend. Now just another person who lived in the same city as me. I remembered Jack Kerouac's maxim, accept loss forever. I managed a little internal smile. For I was Liam Williams, novice buyer of milk, cleaner of kitchens, rebuffer of austerities, dreamer of better futures, employer of weird sentence constructions. I walked south to meet my housemates, who were amongst thousands of people on the streets protesting the coalition government's cuts to education and the tripling of tuition fees. Many covered their faces and carried sticks. There were fires in Trafalgar Square. Ladhood was written and performed by Liam Williams and starred Paul Copley, Sally Grace, Kieran Hodgson, Freya Parker, Paul G. Raymond and Al Roberts. The script editor was Darren Johnson, the producer was Joe Nunnery, and it was a BBC Studios production.